Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. I hope you're very well. You're listening to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer. I'm a paediatric therapist and I'm the director of Ed Elf Child Therapy Limited and its sister training company for therapists, the Child Hypnotherapy Institute. And I've recently been diagnosed autistic myself. So I'm very inspired to bring you a diverse and rich range of autistic voices from the community. People who are diagnosed, people who are not diagnosed, people who work alongside and collaborate with autistic families or autistic adults, people who identify as neurodivergent. Please come and join the conversation. I'd love to hear from you. You can email me at Evelyn, that's EvaLynne, at childhypnotherapyinstitute.com, or contact me via the show. Thank you for joining me with Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. Lovely to have you all here. And my guest of the week is a 16-year-old named Eddie. So welcome to the show, Eddie.
Hiya. Hello.
Hello. Now, I will point out that although you're 16... listeners, your mum, Tanya, did contact the show and we've met together. So there is consent from you and mum for you to appear on the show. That's right, isn't it, Eddie?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Now, why don't you think about, while I'm talking about gratitude, about something you're grateful for today. So for me, it's a beautiful October day and I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful for the sunshine and the clear, crisp skies. And I don't mind it being a bit cold. I really like wearing sort of layers and boots and scarves and hats. I love this season. So I'm really grateful for the autumn and the turning of the season. Yeah, and I love the colours and everything. So how about you, Eddie? What are you grateful for today?
I was going to say something very similar.
Oh, are you? That's okay.
Yeah. I love winter and I don't really like summer very much, so I'm just happy that it's going to be colder and hats and scarves and jackets and jumpers weather. So, yeah.
That's interesting, isn't it? We're both feeling the same today. And so it's not on your list of questions, but tell us a bit more about why summer is a season that's not really for you.
I find like heat quite like sensory, and yeah. I don't really like it. It's just too hot. Me and the heat don't work well together. And I prefer like winter and autumn fashion. I prefer the like hot coffees and like pumpkins and Christmas and everything like that. It's yeah. Great.
So do I. I think it might be a sensory thing because at this time of year, you've got like really bright sun early mornings and then kind of dark evenings. And there's lots of different sort of textures. And, you know, when you get like ice and snow and fog and all of those things. So I agree with you. I think it's a wonderful time of year. So thank you for sharing that. So why don't you tell listeners a bit about yourself, how you identify and what you're doing with your life?
So I'm non-binary. I use he/they pronouns. At the moment, I'm in college and I'm doing creative media production, so like films and stuff. I play hockey, but I've taken a break from that to do some BFI work.
What's BFI work?
So I've been accepted onto a course. So BFI is British Film Institute.
Wow.
So I've been accepted onto one of their courses. And they just happened to be on the same day as all my hockey training. So
Well,
Yeah.
it sounds like there are two passions in your life. So how did you make the decision of which to do?
I want to go into film. I want to be a filmmaker,
Yeah.
and the course that I got onto is quite difficult to get onto, so it was quite an easy decision for me,
Oh,
but
well
I'd
done. Well
go
done.
on
So,
to.
yeah, well, tell us a bit. We're going to go on to talk about your personal choices about your identity, and you've mentioned your pronouns and stuff. But before we do that, since you've mentioned the British Film Institute course you've got on, a huge congratulations, because I'm sure that was a lot of work to be
Yeah.
accepted onto that course. But tell us a bit about the course then. Where is it? How long? All of that stuff.
So it started 2 weeks ago, I think. And it's a 2 month long course, and it's just the first step in a long journey of getting into film.
Wow.
And so there are 20 students on the course. Over 50 applied, and you make a film. So everybody submits at the moment we're currently writing the story for a 3 minute short film, and then everybody submits it, and then they choose a film to do, and then we get split up into two, and we make it. So
That sounds really
it should be good
exciting.
fun.
Yeah, it sounds
Yeah.
really good fun, and what a great way to learn. And again, well done for getting into that final 20 out of 50 people who applied. And if you're listening and you applied and didn't get in, I'm so sorry that we're talking about it. But it sounds really good, really, really good, and great. At 16 to have the opportunity to do that at the beginning, I guess, of your, as you said, your long journey into film. So that's ace.
Yeah, it's good
All right,
fun.
good fun. So you're non-binary, and
Yeah.
didn't quite catch your preferred pronouns. Can you say them again?
I use he, they.
He, they, and you also identify as trans person.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how important is it for people to respect your personal choices about your identity?
I think it's quite important because it just makes people so much more comfortable with being who they are, and with pronouns, because pronouns are so important, because from a young age it's been very gendered of she her pronouns, so you must be female, he him pronouns, you must be a man, like that,
Yes.
but that's not how it actually is. For me it's really important to just respect people's decisions, not decisions because it's not a decision, but re just respect who people are. And if it doesn't, and if you don't agree with it doesn't matter, because that's who they are.
Yeah, I think it's really important that you've come on the show to talk about that, because Eddie, you're absolutely right. It's no one else's business, but it actually does mean a lot to the person as to how they are referred to and spoken to in terms of, you prefer he, they. And there's, do a lot of people ask you your pronouns?
No, I usually have to tell them, I usually have to correct them, but I think people should start asking people's pronouns, because it's so important for them to feel comfortable and be like it's not their fault, like it's nobody's fault, but it makes me feel so much more comfortable when people ask me my pronouns before a conversation
Yes.
than, having to correct them, because that makes me feel bad for correcting people.
Oh, does it? Okay. That's good to
So
know. Yeah. I mean, you know what? On a side note, one of the things I do is teach hypnotherapy to people who are studying hypnotherapy, so they're going to become therapists, and counseling skills. And one of the things that you do when you're a therapist or counselor is you have a like a form, consultation form, where you take down people's details and information. And lots of forms, not just in therapy, but in, everywhere you go where you have to fill a form in, might ask for gender, What I say to my students is, don't ask people their gender. Ask them what their preferred pronouns are. It tells you everything you need to know. And what? Why do you need to know someone's gender? You only need to know it in terms of how to address them, you know, as a he or a she or a them or a they. So you just ask them what their preferred pronouns are. And you know what? I think it's something that your generation and people who have been born in the last maybe, you know, 30 years are a lot more used to than people who are older, like me and above. So I think it's an important thing for you to talk about. And can you say something about how you identify as a neurodivergent person?
I'm autistic and I have ADHD, and that's I was diagnosed in January last year. Well, no, January of 2020.
Yes, so sort of pandemic time. Was it?
I think no. Sorry, I got my dates wrong there. It was the year after that. So I've not been diagnosed for a year yet.
Okay, so you were only diagnosed when you were 15, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. So is that something that you talk to people about as well as your pronouns?
Sometimes, yeah. If like with the ADHD side of things, people, I've become quite good at masking, so... But with ADHD, I find it a lot more difficult. So people tend to pick up on that one a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So I tend to tell them about that one and be like, I'm really, like, my brain can't stop today. I'm really, really sorry. And they're fine with that. They're fine with that. But sometimes when I tell people about that, sometimes when I tell people that I'm autistic, they act a lot differently,
right?
Which is interesting.
Yeah, I find the same, and I think everyone who comes on the show could agree with you on that. And sometimes people's behavior towards you being different, when you tell them that you're autistic, can be a good different. It doesn't always have to be a negative, but it definitely changes how people see you. But I do think that in the main, people want to understand and they want to learn and know more, especially if they're people who are close to you. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. What I think is one of the real positives of being autistic and ADHD is, you know, it doesn't surprise me that you're really interested in the media and film and creativity, you know, because it's a really good place for autistics who are ADHD as well in the creative kind of world, because you can allow your brain to go, you know, have all these amazing creative ideas and thoughts, and it's a really good place to put your passion.
It's great.
It is great. So why film then? What is it about film that you really like?
I love how much of it has like an impact on people. When I was younger, I used to really like reading. I'm also dyslexic, so I find reading really difficult. But films are storytelling from different people's point of view. And just understanding different types of people in the world. And it's like escapism from real life. So if you're having a bad day, you can sit down and watch a film. And for that hour and a half, or however long it is, you're not in this world. You're in this whole different universe with different people, different characters, different problems, and also you can tell so much about people from their favorite film. So you can just ask someone what their favorite film is, and you can just tell so much about them from that moment.
Interesting. Is that something you will ask people then as a conversation starter?
Probably, yeah.
Or genre, I guess. So, well, what's your favourite film or genre?
I love the thriller and horror genres.
Interesting.
Because I really appreciate how difficult it is to create that, like tension of how, I love thrillers for that. in Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho, he uses very, very, very little special effects. Like the only bit of special effects he uses is in the shower scene,
That's
which is
right.
just the blood going into the drain, and that's not difficult at all. But still, I watched it for the first time when I was maybe 13, and it's so scary. And that was
It's
made in
really scary.
1960.
Yeah. And you're right, he has it's probably quite a low budget film, you know, doesn't need the use of all these sort of gadgets and fancy effects and CGI and all the rest of it we use now, but it's all about the tension building and the kind, you know, the fear that that instills in us as the not knowing what's going to happen and what's, you know, it's and that's why it's lasted all of this time as one of the top films still. So yeah, I think that's really interesting. And what you just said as well, Eddie, I was talking to another autistic young person the other day, not on the radio, but just in conversation really. He's autistic and ADHD, doing A levels, so a similar age to you. And he was saying that when he feels really overwhelmed with the stress of A levels and things, or there's a lot going on, one of the ways that he can recalibrate and sort of, you know, calm his brain is to watch something. And he was talking about exactly what you said, that for that hour and a half or 2 hours or however long the film is, you're able to switch your own life off a bit and suspend reality and go into another reality, go into another world. And that is really calming, you know. Yeah. So I totally get it. I really do. Okay, so it sounds to me like you're enjoying college, but I don't want to make assumptions, but you sound very motivated and positive about it.
It's good. It's really good. Much better than school.
Okay, well, on that note, we're just going to pause and listen to some adverts and music, and then we're going to come back after the break and you can tell me about what school was like for you. Welcome back, listeners, to Autistic Voices on UK Health Radio. I'm Evelyn Charmer, and I'm speaking today to Eddie, who is 16. So, welcome back, Eddie.
Hello.
Hello. So, thank you for being here. And just before the break there, you mentioned that college is, quote, much better than school. So, what was your experience of school?
I went to a very small all-girls boarding school in the middle of nowhere. And now I'm currently at a college with 1600 people in a day. So it's very, very different. My school, essentially, to fit in at that school, you needed to be cishet and neurotypical, and I am not none of those things. So I didn't fit in with everybody else. I when I was younger, I never used to have like female friends. I always had male friends, so I didn't know how to talk to them. It was just there were just many things that just made it didn't work.
Yeah.
And then, the pandemic hit. So
How was that for you?
I'm a massive introvert, so I loved lockdown.
Yeah.
So I loved sitting in my room all day, just doing lessons online, not having to talk to anyone particularly, just
So you were kind of quite relieved of that experience. And it sounds like being in a small, you can't really hide in a small girls' boarding school, can you? You can't really sort of fade into the background. And you just said you have to be cis, het, and neurotypical, which is none of the things that you identify with. Being cisgender, for our listeners who don't know, means being identifying with the gender you were born in. And heterosexual means, I guess, fancying people of the opposite gender, right? And neurotypical means having a neurotypical brain and not a neurodivergent one like yours and mine. So all of those things must have been quite challenging for a young, you know, growing Eddie. And so how did you cope with all of that going on? And when,
Not particularly well.
yeah, not particularly well, I'm sure, because it's a really difficult thing to try to fit into an environment where you feel like everyone else is a certain way, like you said, cis, het, and NT, and you don't fit into any of that criteria. And I think that can be really difficult growing up, you know, on
Yeah.
your identity. So when did you come out as a non-binary trans person? Was it in school? Was it when you left school? When was that?
Was when I was in year 10, the summer of year 10, which was I think it was 2020, I want to say.
Okay.
About May of 2020
Okay.
ish.
And can you talk a bit about that? Like why you decided then, or what it was like coming out in year 10?
So I about a year before I came out to my sister as a non-binary lesbian, and I was really struggling with my mental health at that point. And for me, I don't see the point in coming out, so I didn't plan on it because that's just like it doesn't matter. I think it just doesn't really matter. Which shouldn't be turned into this big massive thing. So I wasn't really planning on coming out because everybody knew already, so there wasn't a point. But my sister told my mum because she thought I was because I was really struggling with my mental health. But my sister did it. I didn't do it. Bit of a touchy subject, but
I guess
yeah.
it sounds like you can understand her motivation for wanting mum to know and to get you support probably. But from your point of view, it sounds like what you're saying is it's a touchy subject because actually it wasn't your choice at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah,
okay.
exactly. Yeah.
So what was it like for you at school after coming out or being outed?
So yeah. So we it wasn't it all, a lot of my friends at school are queer and neurodiverse. Which was very it was nice because they all like understood it. They already knew. So they were all really good with it, but when I came out specifically a lot more as a lesbian, a lot of the girls in my school decided that they didn't want me to be in their dorms anymore, like
Right.
at all, because
Because they made judgments
they
about
did
what.
they a bit of lesbophobia.
Yes. So they suddenly felt that you threatened
Yeah.
that you might see them in a romantic sense, I guess, or a
Yeah.
sexual way, as opposed to just being another one of the girls. As I say
Yeah.
before. So, you know, that must have felt really, really difficult as well.
Yeah, it wasn't fun, but
No. In a boarding school as well, where you have no choice but to be all living together.
yeah.
So, you know, you were very brave to have gone through that challenge. So now that you're at college, are you still boarding? Are you living at home?
No, I'm living at home now. It's just the local college.
That's good.
Yeah, and they're all really chill.
They're
So,
all
which
really
is
chill.
nice.
So just going back to when you were at school then, what would have been better or made life easier for you in school at that time?
I was thinking about this, but I don't. It's that's just the way the school is. It's a very that
Okay.
it's people's attitude. The school couldn't have done anything better
Yes,
because
but
they were all amazing.
so people's
But
attitude. So if there's someone out there listening now, say, who's in a similar position that say one of their friends has recently been outed or come out as non-binary or trans or something like that, or a lesbian, and they're not sure how to handle it, What would your advice be to them as a friend to that person?
I would just say accept them and be there for them. If they need to talk to you about something, listen, because it can be very, very difficult, especially in that first 6 months of coming out when everybody's still getting your name wrong, still getting your pronouns wrong. It can be very, very difficult. But just be there for them and don't change the way you act around them, because that can be really difficult as well.
Absolutely. And especially as you're in year 10, so you've known these people for quite a long time when you came out. And so you hadn't changed. All that changed was that you were unmasking and being open about how you were on the inside. And so it must be really hurtful when the people that have known you and hung out with you absolutely fine suddenly start treating you differently in a negative way. Just because you've been honest with who you are and you're being authentic. So, I'm not surprised that that was damaging to your mental health. And I can tell that you're in a much better place now. But if there are other young people listening out there who are struggling with that, I would say please talk to someone and you're not alone. All right. And if other people cannot accept you for your authentic self, then that's their problem. And it is hurtful. But do talk to somebody. In fact, there will be other people. You said yourself just then, didn't you, Eddie, that you did have a small group of friends who did get it and you could relate to. So there's you're never going to be on, you're never completely alone with this. There's a lot of people who, during sort of adolescence, want to be more authentic with who they feel they are and how what they show you. So make that possible for them. Be welcoming, be non-judgmental. Yeah, be there for them, like you said.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay, well, you touched earlier, just before we have some more music in a moment, I just wanted to touch on this. So you said that you've chosen the British Film Institute course at the moment over hockey, and I know you mentioned that you've got a love of hockey. So what's your experience and thoughts and feelings and opinions on being trans in sports from your point of view?
A lot of people in my team are queer, so they're all okay with it. But it can be very, very difficult because I'm in the ladies team, and I feel very dysphoric about that name, and I hate it. And when they go, okay, let's go, ladies, it's not fun. It's just the terminology, really. Because it's a lot about the terminology that they use. Since being in an all-girls school, I get, I'm used to not being in a I'm used to like that terminology, but it's still not fun, you know?
So it's still set very in a very binary way, isn't it? It's still guys and ladies. Welcome back to Autistic Voices. I'm Evelyn Charmer and I'm speaking with Eddie today, who is 16 years old and has been talking about all sorts of things about being a non-binary trans person and preferring the pronouns he, they, about film and their love of film, and also about Alfred Hitchcock. We've covered all sorts of things, haven't we? So you've explained a bit about your struggles through school, and also at that point, you hadn't even been diagnosed at school of being of ADHD and autism. So you had all that going on in the background as well as feeling like you weren't being accepted for who you are. And we talked briefly, we just started to get into the difficulties that people can experience of being trans in sports. So the thing you've mentioned is the terminology of, you know, you haven't got any choice. You're in a ladies' team, right?
Yeah.
What's the alternative? What would you prefer?
If it was up to me, if I was able to change it, I would do mixed teams. And if it, say, there's 12 people in a team, I'd split it right down the middle and say six male people, six female people in the team. On the pitch at that time, there has to be the exact same amount of male and female people on that pitch.
Yeah.
And they would just make it a lot more, just do mixed teams and do it by skill rather than sex or gender.
Perceived gender, shall we say, perceived gender. So, you know, if you had mixed teams, I'm assuming what you mean by that, because you've said already that quite a few of your team members are queer and trans and all the rest of it. So I guess what you're meaning is people who themselves feel they are male or female or non-binary. Yeah?
Yeah.
Not necessarily what their outer appearance might suggest.
Yeah.
Thank you. So what else do you think might need to change to support trans people in sports in a wider sense, not just at school and college, but just in general?
There was a story I heard, and it was in the Olympics at some point, or, you know, a big competition thing. And I think this woman, she was a swimmer or a runner, like something like that, an athletics sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she's trans, so she transitioned from male to female, and all the doctors were like, yes, you can carry on doing your sport. And she absolutely wiped the floor with them, but she got the go from, she took enough hormones, so it was level with everybody else, and there was massive backlash from that,
right?
Because she's trans, going, no, you've got more testosterone. That's not fair. That's not fair. It came back that she was just much better than everybody else. She was just, and I think that's, I hate that it had backlash. She's just really good at her sport.
Yeah.
It's not because she's trans. It's because she's good at her sport. That's why she won. And I think we need to, you know, just be a lot more inclusive of that. That it just, you can't blame it on the fact that she's trans.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And I guess it also, again, it's about that kind of gender expectation anyway. So who's to say that a male is better at a sport than a female anyway? You know, I think the girls' football recently proved that, didn't it? But
absolutely.
You know, I think there's a lot of kind of gender expectation and assumptions anyway in sport. So it can't help. And you know, I think to have got to that level, Olympic level, as a trans person, you know, good on them, because that can't have been an easy ride either, you know.
No.
But what's really positive about that story is that people like you, Eddie, are taking it on board and thinking about it and talking about it. And maybe generationally, these things are slowly, the tide is turning, and people's thoughts, opinions about all of this stuff is on the change. You know,
I really, really hope so. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the thing is, if you didn't have that as a something to refer to and that experience to be able to relate to, then, you know, those conversations might not happen. And I think it's important that these things happen in the public eye. You know.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, people are not going to know what happens in the boarding school or at college or in your group of friends. And I think sometimes it takes public figures, doesn't it? It's the same with neurodivergence. I've found that more people are talking about it now because there are certain people in the media who have kind of come out as neurodivergent, and it really helps because it gets those conversations flowing.
Yeah.
So, do you think there's anything that could change in just in the community in terms of trans people in sports or in any other area of life?
I get I'm not just as it as in like the community as in
Well, what about, I mean,
LGBT.
do you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of things like when you go to when you go to a shopping centre or something like that, or you go to any sort of event, they've got things like male and female toilets, airports, train stations, everywhere. The toilets are always gender specific, aren't they? Changing rooms to go and try on clothes, things like that. Certainly in the UK, I know that there are other countries that do this better than us. But for example, if you saw, well, not you, but if somebody, just general P Joe Public, saw somebody who is transitioning from, say, female to male, in a certain changing room, in the male changing rooms during their transition, that they might take offence to that. And, that's not okay.
No.
Just a bit like the sports person you were just talking about, who people have made judgments on their performance rather than on their skill because of their gender or not. It's the same, isn't it? People making assumptions about why are you in a female changing room or a male changing room or a toilet, So I do think we've got a long way to go in terms of being more inclusive, haven't we, in the
Yeah.
community. Okay. So are there other LGBTQ plus issues that you're passionate about and would like to mention?
There's I wrote an essay for college on
Right.
this film that I love. It's amazing, called But I'm a Cheerleader, and I love that film with all my being. And it breaks all stereotypes of queer people. It's about this girl, and she goes to conversion therapy, and she's like, I can't be gay. I'm a cheerleader, but she is, and I love that it just breaks all of these stereotypes. It was made in 1999,
Wow.
and it just breaks all of these stereotypes of what queer people should be, because in that film there are so many different types of people, and it just breaks all of these things. But it also shows a really big light on 1990s lesbophobia, and it's amazing, that film.
So what was it called? Was it called By Cheerleader?
But I'm a cheerleader.
But I'm a cheerleader, sorry. But
Yeah.
I'm a cheerleader. So that was made in 1999. And that sounds
Yeah.
like, do you think people will still be able to find that on Netflix or somewhere?
It's on Amazon Prime.
Oh, it's on Amazon Prime. Okay. So if that's something that sounds of interest, please go and have a look at that. That sounds really good. Breaking stereotypes. And really, for the late 90s, that's quite a progressive film as well, I have to say, having grown up in the 90s.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. And let's go back to then film, right? So
Okay.
if somebody said to you that their favorite type of film, their favorite genre was comedy, what would that tell you about them?
Would tell me that they're probably quite laid back in the way they like. They try to present very laid back and quite funny, but I feel like they also might have like stresses, a lot of stresses in life at the moment.
Oh, interesting.
Because if you're watching a comedy, it's to de-stress. That's what comedies are for. So
Yes.
that's what I would think, whether that's right or not, but
Interesting. So you're kind of like a sort of film psychologist. Yeah, I love it. And my last question, and it's not on your list because when we created the list of questions, you hadn't got into the British Film Institute course. So you said earlier then, and I think this is a nice one to end on, that you all the students on the course get to write or draw a 3-minute film story, yeah, storyboard. Can you share anything about your ideas for yours?
Well, mine. I'm not a writer. Let's just put that first, because I can't write, so mine. But I was thinking of maybe like a kind of like a if you've seen Fleabag, I don't know,
Yes, I
but
have seen Fleabag. It's brilliant.
yeah, it's amazing. But that sort of thing, like just this very normal woman just sat there at the bar waiting for her date, like this blind date sort of thing. And it's just this internal monologue. And she just sat there doing very normal stuff, but she's very, very stressed. And it's just that internal monologue of what if I like what if I don't like them? What do I do? What like what? Who? What? Why? And there's just a very, very fast-paced, continuous sentence of stress.
Interesting. And I like how you obviously think very visually, Eddie.
Yeah.
So I got a really clear picture in my head then of what you were describing. So it doesn't matter if you can write or not write. And I know you said earlier you're dyslexic as well. It's about being able to create films, about creating pictures in people's minds, isn't it? It's about creating relationships with the characters. And that
Yeah.
in a dialogue and everything. So I think that sounds great, and good luck. I really hope that whether it's yours that gets picked to be made or not, it sounds like it's a really exciting experience anyway, and you're going to learn so much and
Yeah.
have so much fun. And it also sounds like you have found your niche in so many ways, and I hope that your sense of who you are and your well-being and mental wealth continue to grow and develop as you are growing and developing with all of this. So I think you're incredibly amazing, and also very, very brave to come on the show and talk about these issues that aren't easy to talk about. And it's very powerful. And I've really enjoyed talking to you today. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Okay. You take care,
You
and
take care.
thanks for being guest of the week.
Oh, you too. Thank you.
Welcome.
UK Health Radio Podcast is the world's leading health conversation starter. 47 experts showcase all options of sickness prevention through lifestyle changes such as nutrition, reducing stress, sleep, breathing correctly, spending time in nature, meditation, fasting, as well as cultivating an attitude of gratitude and mindfulness. Our experts inform and animate you to take responsibility for your own health and well-being. You can choose from 42 weekly podcast episodes and be an active part of your health freedom. UK Health Radio Podcast, here for you and your well-being.